The Bears are playing this huge playoff game against the blood rival on a Saturday night in their own building.
Mm-hmm.
First home playoff game since the double doink. It's not like they get home playoff games every other year.
Right.
Still happens much more frequently than the Jets, but nevertheless, it's a special event. So here the Bears are playing the Green Bay Packers in the midst of an epic comeback, which I don't know if anybody saw coming. In the midst of this, news breaks that their baseball team, their most popular baseball team, the Chicago Cubs, are stunningly signing Alex Bregman to a 5-year contract.
Right.
What would we do in a situation like that? Like, the Jets are playing a playoff game, and Kyle Tucker signs with the Mets.
Right. I think you still have time to process the Bregman thing, because it's not urgent. I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not urgent.
Right. You're not doing anything other than just enjoying the shock of it.
You're not seeing him in a Cubs uniform. You're not seeing anything for a while. So there's still time to process. And because the Bears won, that's going to be the story.
It became an epic night.
100%.
I mean, because at the time...
Now, but it's like an afterthought epicness. It's kind of like, oh, yeah. We also signed Alex Bregman.
Yeah. I mean, I look, the Jets specifically, whatever the Mets did, and you know how much I love the Mets, it would be an afterthought because it would be so unique that the Jets are actually playing a home playoff game and pulling off an epic... It would basically be like the Jets coming back on the Patriots.
But it's been that way for the Bears for a long time.
In what aspect?
Having a playoff game.
Well, they haven't had a home playoff game since the double doink. What year was that? 2018? 2017? Something of that nature?
Right.
So it's been a while.
But it's even rare with that one.
It's rare for the Jets. No, we win.
No, without a doubt. You guys don't make the playoffs, period. So
we don't make the playoffs, let alone a home playoff game. The closest example I could come up with was the infamous Mikal Bridges trade in the midst of Mets-Yankees. Mm. But it's a June baseball game. You know what I mean?
See, this is the problem with problem with Major League Baseball's in their offseason. It's so long and random.
Yeah, it can happen on a Saturday night during a Bear Packer game.
Right. Seriously. Not midweek, not on a, you know, Monday morning or whatever. Actually, more importantly, because it's football season, a Wednesday morning.
Right.
It happens in the middle of the biggest game in Chicago in a long time. And I guess you care. But I can't imagine most people cared, especially given how that game was going.
Yeah, I would have major mental confusion. Like, that's basically my reaction would have been like, I would have been so mentally confused if I was sitting at MetLife Stadium and all of a sudden, like, the Mets made a massive, what I would call shocking move.
Right. Don't they have control over when they release that?
No, because it's leaked to a reporter. I mean, think about it. It's not like the Cubs announced it. It just got leaked out by Jeff Passan.
Evan, this is where I think that you are such a psychopath.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a soul in Chicago that literally cared more than 3 seconds about Bregman in that moment at that time.
I don't know about
After the game.
Fine. Right. I don't know about a soul from Chicago, but I have a soul from Boston. Because remember, there was a losing end to this, and that is the Boston Red Sox lost Alex Bregman. Listen to this reaction from Hogdale of Barstool. He's a big Red Sox fan and was watching the game live because Barstool does a lot of those live watches, and there were Bear fans, and there's Hogdale with his Tom Brady jersey, and he's a Red Sox fan. So when you say maybe you don't register it in the moment, here was Hogdale's response to the Red Sox losing Alex Bregman.
You're pathetic! And now we sit here like, okay, well, like an idiot. Oh, I guess we'll go beside Bo Bichette. It sounds like such a cope. It's a feeble, pathetic cope. None of us believe they're going to sign Bo Bichette right now. What, they're going to overextend themselves when Dave Dombrowski's in the market for him? I'll believe when you actually do it. Worthless group of losers. You're a worse team than you were last year. If the offseason ended right now, it's a F. Fix it. You suck. See ya.
Now I needed this to happen during the Patriots playoff game.
You know what I'm wondering, Sean? You may be right. When it's good news, it's easier to say,
yes.
Great, I'll think about it later.
Right.
If it's bad news,
you can't help but react.
Maybe it does sink into the game you're watching. Like, I don't think Cody Bellinger is a good equivalent because you only had him for a year. So I don't know if like losing Bellinger in the middle of a giant playoff game would affect you. But let me ask you this. If you lost Aaron Judge in the middle of a giant playoff game, and that, I guess, technically could have happened.
That's a big deal.
That was the same offseason, but Judge obviously did it quickly.
But this isn't the same because Bregman's not mean, how long?
He's not. No.
It's not as emotionally attached.
No, this would have been like last night if that's when the Devers trade happened at, 6-3 Patriots Chargers last night.
But I'm
a homegrown guy.
But I'm asking you because it's not equivalent.
Yeah.
If you lost Aaron Judge in the middle of Giants Vikings,
oh, you'd shift to baseball. 100%.
Yeah, I think I'd look down, I'd mumble a bunch of pissed offness, and then like a random conversation would happen about it again in my head in the third quarter, and then I'd be fully engulfed in it the moment the game ended. Like, you'd have to, like, you'd be going back and forth with folders in your brain. It would be distracting, though, definitely.
All right, let's get back to your calls. 888-808-1019, the number. Dan is in New Jersey. Hey, Dan.
What up, Dan?
Hey, how are you? I appreciate you taking my call, Evan and Tiki. Tiki, longtime fan. Love you, man.
Thank you, brother.
I was just calling in about the Jags and Bills game. First quarter, 4th and 2, Jags go for it, barely missed it, but you lose the game by 3. This happens in the NFL a lot lately.
Yes.
I don't know what it is, whether Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City always going for it, now other teams. If you look at Dan Campbell, the Lions record, they had a killing season, and they didn't make the playoffs because they're constantly going for it on 4th down instead of taking the points. And, I noticed a lot of teams are doing that.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
Bill Belichick used to always be, we're going for the points, we're going for the points, we're going for the points. And he always had a successful season,
Let's go to that specific one, because you're right. In general, the going for it on 4th down is through the roof specifically. If you go back to the Ben Johnson game,
yeah,
the Chicago game, because
yeah,
Ben Johnson was constantly going for it on 4th down. We even saw it in the Carolina game, and I thought it set a terrible tone
mm-hmm.
for the Carolina Ram game when immediately they were going for it,
right.
And it basically helped the Rams take an early 14-0 lead. But the play you're talking about is an interesting one, because Liam Cohen was asked about it after the game, which is, do you have any regrets about going for it on 4th and 2 from the 9-yard line instead of taking the points? And Liam Cohen would, like, before the reporter was done asking the question, was like, no.
Mm.
And his answer was a good one, which is, this is what we've done all year.
Yeah, but...
And he's not wrong. Like, he's been aggressive all year.
All year is regular season, not an elimination game. I'm going home. So this play happened. It was 11 minutes left in the second quarter.
And it was 7-3 Jacksonville.
Jags had a 7-3 lead.
Yep.
And if they just kick the field goal, it's 10-3.
Yep.
And so I get why this is, it could bring consternation to a Jag fan, because why are you so rushed to score points right now? Just get the guaranteed points. You've handled the Bills so far for the first quarter and some change. Why are you so worried that you're going to need to score points upon points upon points this early? And so I would have kicked the field goal, because 2nd and 2 is not, it's not 2nd and 1. You know what I mean? It's not like 4th and 1 or 4th and inches. There's a lot of yardage you have to try to pick up
here. And remember what they did. They ran an option with Trevor Lawrence. They called it as if he got it on the field, and then McDermott threw the challenge flag,
yep,
and it was overturned because his knee was down as like slightly before the first down marker. So it was close.
Right.
But they ran with Trevor Lawrence on the previous play on 3rd and 12. They ran with Trevor Lawrence, and
yeah,
he came up just a few yards short.
That was a scramble.
This
right.
one, I think, was a tush push.
No,
it was a design run.
No. It was a zone read. So he faked it inside. He
the 4th down play.
The 4th down, and he
yep.
came back around the edge. The DN was gone. It was a great play because the guard was supposed to get up and block the linebacker. He didn't get through, and so Trevor Lawrence is one-on-one with the linebacker, and he just kind of like, oh, crap, and he slips
yep.
and falls short by a half a yard or whatever it was. And, those type of moments only matter when the result is the other team going and scoring a touchdown. Now, they had 90 yards to go.
92 yards they went.
But guess what happened?
They scored a touchdown.
The Buffalo Bills go and score a touchdown. So instead of being potentially 10-10, you're now 10-7.
There are two things that made this worse. You hit on one of them. So when you fail on a 4th and 2 from the 9-yard line, the positive is, all right, you're making your opponent go 90-plus yards.
Yes.
Negative number one is that Josh Allen made it very easy to go 98 yards.
Yes.
He did it very easily. They faced 1/3 down during their march down the field. But you know what also made it worse? And this is like air out of balloon if you're a fan. You tell me if it's air out of balloon if you're mm-hmm. a player. Jacksonville got the football in that possession because Ray Davis fumbled the kickoff return.
Right.
So Jacksonville.
They were pulling blank.
Yeah. Jacksonville scored a touchdown and go up 7-3. Great. Buffalo fumbles the kick return. And we're talking about Ray Davis, who's had a tremendous season. And so the Jaguars are set up at the Buffalo 35. At minimum, you got to end up with 3 points. That's, so I thought the other kill was you get this unbelievable possession, like a gift from the gods, and you turn it into zero.
Can't happen.
So that's my other coaching like mantra. If you steal a possession, get any points you can. A turnover is a stolen possession, especially when you're already in scoring position. Get whatever points you can get because treat it as if it doesn't count. It's free. I got some free points here. And so instead of taking the free points, Liam Cohen basically said, no thanks, I don't need it.
Yeah.
That you're right. You reminded me because it was a turnover before. I kind of forgot. When you get a turnover, just score points, man.
It makes it even more of a reason to just take the points.
100%.
Because you cannot have an empty possession when you had a gifted possession based on a fumble from a Pro Bowl special teams player. Let's go to Vito in Wantagh. What's up, Vito?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. So, Evan, I'm with you 100%. Watching those games yesterday as a Jet fan, I mean, it's pathetic to see how bad we are. So, I'm thinking, how do we get Mendoza? How do we get up to number one? before you guys laugh at me, hear me out.
Yeah.
I'm seeing online that the Raiders are heavily scouting offensive linemen, that they're quote-unquote not married to Mendoza.
Mm-hmm.
So how about the Jets offer the second pick, the Raiders' choice of Membu or Fashanu for the first pick, and the Jets' 16th pick?
Wow.
Jets get Mendoza at one. Raiders get their choice of their top offensive lineman at two. Now they rebuilt their offensive line, and they can use a 16th pick, let's say, on Simpson or somebody who's still out there.
So we're going...
Feasible, not feasible? What do you think?
Well, I don't think there's any precedent to that.
It's well, you're giving up basically three first-round picks.
Yes.
You're giving up the pick swap of one and two,
mm-hmm.
and then you're giving up number 16, and I would consider Olu Fashanu as an extra first-round pick.
Yes.
If you're trading any of your first-round tackles that you drafted the last 2 years, it's like a surplus of first-round picks.
Yeah.
Would I be willing to do it? I would for a franchise quarterback, but I heard something this morning that to me has ended all fantasy of the Jets getting Fernando Mendoza. This has ended all fantasy that this could happen. I'm going to play you a clip. This is from the Heisman Show podcast. Fernando Mendoza was a guest and was asked the most cliche question known to man. Who from the past or the present would you want to have as a dinner guest? Now, Mendoza was very carefully said, look, I don't want to do the past. So let me just make, because I'll forget somebody, mm-hmm. it'll offend somebody. Let me just pick somebody from the present. Fernando Mendoza's answer is a death sentence for New York Jets fans. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Mendoza's answer to the one dinner guest from current time that he would love to have. Okay.
We have breaking. I would say my dream dinner guest is Tom Brady. He's someone that I've looked up to my entire life, and I really not only love his play on the field, but his resilience and the way that he's conducted himself throughout his career. I was actually born in Boston, lived there 1 year for my dad when he was in medical residency up there, and he's been a special role model for myself and a special, you know, idol. My role model and my idol is my dad and my mom, and I love them to death. However, football role model to follow is always Tom Brady, as he's had such a resilience, and that's a thing that I think the Hoosiers have shown great this season, whether it's Iowa, Oregon, or Penn State. Resilience has always shown up, and that's something that I do attribute to watching Tom Brady growing up.
Yeah, with Dad. I mean, he's just told you, the owner of the team picking number one is his dream dinner guest. It's over. It's done. Fernando Mendoza's a Raider.
But if you're a really good quarterback on any team, you're going to see Brady more than you would if you were the Raiders quarterback.
That's a good point.
That's a great point.
Because Brady will be calling games, or maybe Fernando Mendoza. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant.
He's playing the game.
If the New York Jets had the first overall pick, would he not say, you know, I started my career playing defensive back, and I loved Aaron Glenn. He was amazing for the Jets. I mean, my dad took me to New York for one, again, completely false story. Took me to New York one weekend. I said, hey, I want to go to a football game. We went to a Jets game. Aaron Glenn had two interceptions, and I was infatuated with him ever since. And now he's the head coach of the New York Jets, and New York is the place to be. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. I would love to sit down in Per Se or some Le Bernardin, some great restaurant in New York City and have dinner with Aaron Glenn.
What if he said that? It would be so over the top. It's such an obvious lie. Like, saying Tom Brady is your dinner guest is like, oh, it makes sense. His best route, if he wanted to kiss the Jets' ass, would, believe it or not, be Joe Namath. It would be, yeah, you know, my dad taught me football as a kid, and the story, I just can't get over is how no one thought the Jets could beat the Baltimore Colts.
But there's no belief. There's no belief that that's real.
Dude, he's an old soul, that Fernando Mendoza.
Yeah, he is. He is.
I mean, Fernando Mendoza saying Tom Brady, though, is a death sentence. And by the way, I'll give you breaking news off of your glass break, and it does involve the Jet quarterback situation. What's the kid's name from Nebraska?
All right, Dylan Raiola, the kid that looks like Patrick Mahomes, and everybody thinks is Patrick Mahomes, but he doesn't play like Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
He is transferred to Oregon this morning.
And that would make you think he knows that Dante Moore is indeed coming out of school despite what was a brutal effort in the national semifinal. So Dante Moore being in the draft, and I'll remind this for Jet fans, whether the Jets take him or not, or you want him or not, is a good thing. You want options. You want the possibility of trading back if someone else likes Dante Moore more than you, or maybe you take Dante Moore. So whether you like him or you don't like him, it is a good thing for Dante Moore to be in this draft, and this is at least an indicator, I would certainly take it as an indicator, that the belief is he is going to come out of school.
Yeah, and you never know. There could be deep down the Raiders preferring Dante Moore, don't tell the Jets that, and then that Kohler's wish of trading up, then that presents that possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
you don't know if the Raiders can get more too and get more capital?
But you know, that's a fantasy.
Yeah, that's not happening.
I mean, come on. That's certainly not happening. The other piece of news that's more negative towards the New York Jets is that Trinidad Chambliss, and you may remember this on Friday, it was rejected by the NCAA, him looking for another year of eligibility.
6 year of eligibility because he was 4 years at Ferris and then 1 year at Ole Miss.
And I brought up to you guys, is there a chance he appeals this? I don't know how the process works. Well, according to Pete Thamel of ESPN, Trinidad Chambliss is actually hiring a prominent Mississippi law firm, with ties to Ole Miss, and they are going to file suit in the state of Mississippi against the NCAA. They are filing a complaint later this week with an effort to secure both a preliminary and permanent injunction.
Wait, so what's the reasoning?
To get another year of eligibility.
I know, but on what grounds?
Lawyer,
he's played
Tom,
5 years of football. Was he aggrieved because he went to a little tiny school and... It doesn't make sense.
The NCAA issued a statement denying a sixth season. The NCAA concluded the insufficient medical documentation provided to support the request. So he
applied for medical, meaning one of those 4 years that he was at Ferris, he didn't play because he was hurt.
And you know what this headline can be? The headline of Trinidad Chambliss is going to sue the NCAA to get another year of eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
The headline is going to be, young quarterback sues so that he isn't drafted by the New York Jets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it's going to sound.
That's exactly what it's going to sound like. But if he makes it clear that he doesn't want to be a Jet, you don't think the Jets are going to draft him.
No, you have to draft. You have to draft the talent.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I don't think you give in. I think the Eli Manning case and the John Elway case.
It's a different era, too.
It's a different era, and it was very, very unique. Let's go to Mitchell in Queens. Hey, Mitchell.
Hey, guys. How are you? Good morning. So, Evan, I don't know... on your list of who to root for, not root for. For me, it's got to be Ben Johnson. You cannot root for him. I mean, the guy is so disrespectful. He is so hard to like. Before he comes in and says anything, he's just dissing everyone in the division. I'm just curious, just you guys from a standing back standpoint, like, does Ben Johnson turn you off?
Yes, he's turned me off from the beginning, but my bias was the arrogance of rejecting even an interview with the New York Jets. But you're right. Like, since his opening press conference, when he said, I just love beating LaFleur twice a year, he comes across very douchey. Now, to his credit, he's done a wonderful job. He's had a great first year. He's helped turn that franchise around. But yes, I find it really difficult to root for Ben Johnson. I can't be alone, Tico.
Well, I mean, I don't mind him because I know how good of a coach he is. And at the end of the day, if you're a good coach, you can get away with being a jerk. And he's a good coach.
It's not considered bragging if you can back it up.
That's 100% right.
Isn't that a Limp Bizkit song?
Right. What do you say? I enjoy beating. Did he beat every team in the division twice?
Did they sweep the division? I don't believe it.
Well, they didn't beat the Packers both times.
Yeah, now he did.
But they beat them the second time, third time.
He still got the two victories against LaFleur.
So I would assume they beat Minnesota both times.
But he never talked about
it doesn't matter. But
any of those guys, he spoke up specifically about LaFleur in his opening press conference, where he said he likes beating them twice.
They lost to the Vikings in week one.
Oh, okay.
They didn't beat Kevin O'Connell twice.
That was the only week J.J. McCarthy looked good.
The Ben Johnson LaFleur thing is very strange because there's no backstory. And we've all looked into it, like, what's the backstory? And there really isn't. Other than, I guess, him shooting towards the top, or maybe looking at another young, offensive-minded head coach and just saying, I want to beat him. And maybe it's a compliment to Green Bay because the Packers have had a lot of regular season success and certainly a lot of success over Chicago over the last 6 years. It's not a personal thing. Just a random thing.
I agree. I don't think that that's a personal slight. I think it's just you're the Green Bay Packers. You're a historic franchise, and he wants to put the Bears back on the map by beating the best franchise in the division. And that's the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
As much as we think it's the Detroit Lions, that's a recency bias thing. Historically, it's been the Green Bay Packers, going back all the way through Aaron Rodgers and through Brett Favre. If you're a head coach of the Bears and you're saying, I want this team to be great, the team you're talking about beating is the Packers.
Absolutely. It's a compliment.
Right. Exactly.
I think, and we did this on Friday, and our last caller referred to this, we put together a route chart, like the teams that we're rooting and we're ranking them, and it's all individual preference. Obviously, if you put money on a game, that will change who you're rooting for. But I can tell you right now, looking ahead to Chicago against Los Angeles, the Rams against the Bears, and it's amazing to say this because Matthew Stafford's won a championship. Sean McVay's been to two Super Bowls. Sean McVay is 57 times more likable than Ben Johnson is. So when you talk about, yes, I respect Ben, he's great at what he does. He is great at what he does. Sean McVay's great at what he does. And Sean McVay comes across like a good dude. So I know when I'm sitting there watching that game, what day is that game, Sean?
That is Sunday. Everybody's up in arms about that.
Yeah, because they're screwing everybody on time off, which is unfair.
Screwing the 49ers. Oh, well, we need the division.
Well, they're not the only ones getting screwed. A lot of teams are dealing. The rest could have been handled differently by the NFL, but we'll address that later. I'm rooting for Sean McVay. And it's not just because he's a ginger. Mm. I just think he's a more likable guy. You don't think he's a likable guy?
Is he really a ginger?
Yeah, he qualifies.
Does he?
Sean McVay, Thomas Jefferson.
Isn't he blonde?
Evan Roberts. What?
I thought he was blonde.
Blonde is a variation of gingerness.
No, come on.
You're stretching.
Stop it.
No, he's a ginger.
That is not true at all.
Sean McVay's a ginger.
He's not. Okay, now I got to look. And now I got to check to see if blonde is a version of ginger.
Well, no, it's a variation, but he's genuinely a ginger.
Is he strawberry blonde?
Blake Griffin, too.